The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I'm the announcer, and Eric is the host. But they named the show after the host, so you have no idea who I am, do you?
Well, do you?
Mommy? Papa? Do you know who I am?
Mommy?
Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Beginning today's program, before we get to our other guests, we have a friend of mine. Many of you know him. Jim Daly heads up Focus on the Family. Jim, welcome to the program.
Eric, it's great to be with you. Thanks so much. Where do you buy your handkerchiefs? That's the first question.
I just use the same one over and over. I'm just fatigued. I can't be bothered. I have to tell you, what you all did in New York a year ago, we are both very, very vocal in the pro-life movement. We believe that the children in their mother's wombs deserve to be born. They deserve to get a chance to breathe and to live. And Focus on the Family, you've been at the forefront of that for so many decades, first with Dr. Dobson and now with you. You take this very seriously. And a year ago, you did something really special, an event here in New York City in Times Square. Obviously now, because of the COVID wackiness, you have something else going on. So it's September 26th. Please tell us about this.
Yeah, it's coming up this Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to be an online streamed event, and we're going to have great speakers. Many people you know, Benjamin Watson and Jeannie Mancini will co-host the event, and Melissa Odom, abortion survivor, along with Candace Owens and many others will give very short presentations. And the crescendo of the event is watching a 4D ultrasound of a baby in the third trimester. And Eric, you know, the message that I felt the Lord laying on my heart was real simple. Show them the baby. It's hard to support taking the life of a child. Just like a woman who's abortion-minded, who goes into a clinic and sees the ultrasound for the first time, oftentimes more than 50% of those women will choose life. I think the culture is very much the same. When they see the baby, this, you know, moving, thumb sucking, arm waving baby inside the womb, you can't deny its humanity. And that's the goal of the presentation, is really to show them the baby and put some of that intellectual rigor around it, why we've got to stop killing our children in the womb.
Well, this is part of the irony of the times in which we live, right? You have usually people who are radically pro-abortion throw around terms accusing folks like us of being anti-science or something absurd like that, which is just, it's so stupid, but they say it over and over and over again. Here, it's just the opposite. We're talking about the science and the facts, and we're saying, do you dare to face the facts? This is the reality. Take a peek. Look, we dare you. When you see this, your heart will be touched. It's not just your mind, your heart will be touched. And I think it's vital that we push on this score and that we show that this is real, that this is a human being no different than you right. or me or anyone listening or watching this program right now. That to me is what's so amazing is when you begin to think of it in those terms. And so what you did a year ago and what you're doing again September 26th, that's this weekend, holy cow, 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's called See Life, that's S-E-E, not S-E-A, See Life 2020. And what is the way to find this, Jim?
The easiest way is to go to the Focus on the Family Facebook page. People can stream it from there, or they can go to the focusonthefamily.com webpage, and there'll be direction on how to find it. But, you know, Eric, you're so right. When you look at the COVID situation and, you know, obviously nearing 200,000 deaths, that's horrific. But when you look at the abortion issue and the number of human beings taken out by abortion, it's reaching 63 million. and the duplicity of those on the other side in that regard. Certainly, you know, I lost a friend to the COVID crisis. But at the same time, when you look at what abortion has done, I saw a stat the other day, Eric, that's unbelievable. When you look at Black Lives Matters, just the statement, not the movement. Yes, Black Lives Matter. But when you look at abortion, abortion takes more Black lives than all other things that Black people die from every year combined. There's more Black abortion than cancer, heart attacks, suicide, violence. More Black children are dying from abortion than all Black people die from everything else combined in a given year. Think of that. It's also the only minority that's on the descent, on the decline. All other minorities in America are going up in terms of percentage of population. The Black population is going down, and I think I know why.
Look, there's no question. This is, again, we're just dealing in facts. Planned Parenthood is a business. They make profit off of abortion. That's how they make, that's their business model. When you talk to people like Abby Johnson and others, they were told, they have been told, they're being told today, you need to push this product, the product of taking a human life in her mother's womb. That's how they make money. And they target Black urban communities because they know that the people there are vulnerable, that they are not as well. I would say most of them don't have the kinds of options and choices. And so they target these vulnerable women, many of whom do not have men standing by them. And they very opportunistically do this to make money and consequently take Black lives out of the equation, out of the population. This is just a fact. And we should be able to at least talk about this. We know that Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was such a racist that she did this intentionally. In other words, she cared less about making money than about actually getting rid of Black lives. And she has been the hero of Planned Parenthood and that whole world for decades and decades. This is a reality. We're finally beginning to see it. But on the positive side of things, Jim, we're finally beginning to see the science in a way that we couldn't. I mean, 50 years ago, when you said it's a blob, it's a bunch of cells in the womb, it was hard to argue. Now, the facts couldn't be clearer.
It's so true, Eric, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Thank the Lord for the scientists at GE that created the ultrasound where you could look into the womb. It does great therapeutic work and diagnostic work for doctors, but it also clearly shows a baby in the womb growing. You know, somebody said to me, this little boy who's 12 years old heard about what we're doing on Saturday night and wanted to jump in and join. He called all of his friends and the parents of those friends and asked them to support his effort to raise $30,000. And he brought me to Focus. He brought a pouch of the first installment of $3,000, this 12-year-old, and said, you know, Mr. Jim, the way I see it, if I had an apple seed in my hand, I would not say it's not an apple tree someday. It's still an apple seed. And I'm saying, wow, where does this boy get this wisdom? That's exactly the point. All a human being needs is time and nourishment to grow inside the womb. It is fully human. Right when that first cell is born, it has all the unique genetic traits that they would find in 23andMe. It's human from the get-go.
See, that to me is the key also. When we're talking about science, we can now look very clearly, okay? And when a woman says, my body, my choice, it can't be your body because it has completely different DNA
Correct.
Than you do. There are two human beings, each with unique DNA. When you think about that, and what we can tell from DNA today, you know, we can tell so much. We're in a new world, and we need to be real about it. And this is not about, you know, pitting mother against the baby, but it's to make the mother see that that baby is you. That baby is you once were just like that. And don't deprive yourself of the joy of bringing a life into the world. Jim, we're out of time. I just want to be clear. This is Saturday, the 26th of September, 8 p.m. And you said Focus on the Family website and Focus on the Family Facebook page are the best places to find it.
Correct. That'll be the easiest place to get direction.
And Focus on the Family, what is the, is it FOTF.com or what is that?
FocusOnTheFamily.org or the Facebook, Focus on the Family Facebook page.
Okay, FocusOnTheFamily.org. Jim Daly, my friend, we're just thrilled that you did this. Thanks for coming on to tell my audience about it. We're just, we're proud of you, and we hope it's a tremendous success. Many more lives come into this world as a result. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Bye now.
I like birds on high, then straight to a...
Hey there, folks. Promises made, promises kept. The comedian, Adam Carolla is my guest. Adam, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's fun to talk to you because you're a comedian, and usually comedians are funny, and I actually enjoy that. I don't know about your audiences, but I enjoy your comedy. And I first of all want to announce, you have a book out. Already the title is hilarious. I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. That's the title of your new book. I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Navigating Our No Joke, All Woke Culture. I talked to you with our mutual friend, Dennis Prager, recently. And I was so giddy in the moment that I teased Dennis, you know, probably too hard. Like, he makes me feel so comfortable. I'll just joke with him and stuff. But I'm going to blame it on you because you're a funny guy and you bring that out in me. I want to hear, first of all, my audience is dying to know, speaking of the all woke, no joke culture, can we just talk politics for a minute? And can you give me your take on Biden's pick of Kamala Harris? What are your thoughts? It just happened. I mean, what do you think?
Kamala Harris seems to be kind of an empty vessel to me, not
in a good way.
Sorry?
In a good way?
Well, not really, not intellectually. I was saying on my podcast the other day, whether you know, you couldn't get further apart than Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Politically.
Right.
But I felt like I knew who both those guys were. You know what I'm saying?
I know that. That's very interesting. That's exactly right. That is interesting. Yeah.
I don't feel I know a thing about Kamala Harris, and I don't know if she knows a thing about Kamala Harris.
See, I was just going to say, isn't that the point, that she has given people the impression, at least she's given me the impression, but I've heard many other people say that she doesn't have any core values, that she'll say whatever she needs to get elected, that her core value is power and ambition. She just wants to get where she needs to go. And she has contradicted herself dramatically, you know, just in the campaign. I mean, she basically said she believed Joe Biden's accusers that he was sexually inappropriate. She totally believed them. You know, she said a number of things that were really startling and harsh. And now, you know, she's going to be his VP pick. She is his VP pick. She doesn't give the impression that she herself knows what she believes. But to your point, you pick that up. I think that's why everybody kind of says that about her. They just don't have a clue, because there's nothing to have a clue about.
And, you know, I think, and I feel the same way about Biden. And I think people do this thing where they try to make it a partisan thing. It's really not a partisan thing. It's like, I didn't think Jimmy Carter was a good president, but I felt I knew exactly who he was. And I knew what his values were. And I feel the same way about Clinton. And although Clinton had a little, you know, obviously some more smoke and hokum there than Jimmy Carter did, but Reagan, I felt like I knew who that guy was. I felt like I traditionally know who these people are. Like, you may disagree with Mike Pence, but you feel like you know who Mike Pence is. And my problem with Kamala Harris is I don't feel like I know who she is, and I don't think she wants me to know who she is, and I don't think she cares who she is. I think she wants to get elected.
Okay, but that's kind of bringing up the major point. That's a creepy, scary thing. In other words, somebody is basically saying, just give me power. And, you know, your book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, which, you know, it's funny, but it also is about navigating this woke culture. I believe that whoever is elected, certainly Biden, is in a way, I keep calling him Joe Biden in quotes. There is no Joe Biden. He's just this manufactured, you know, he's like a Trojan horse, and they're going to load it up with woke, you know, whatever it is, mobs inside the Trojan horse. And he's going to go in there with his plastered smile. But the reality is that the Democratic Party has been taken over. It is not, you know, the Joe Biden of 20 years ago or any of that stuff. That's, to me, that's what I see happening.
Yeah, he's kind of the Stepford president. And I don't know what his values are either. I don't know that he has them either. Or if he does, he has to tamp them down because he has to stay in step with the party. So this is but this may be the new world order. This may not be that, I mean, scary, as you say. This may just be where we're going, as this may be where politics is going, where you just take these people and they just sort of parrot these phrases and talking points, and they say, you know, Black Lives Matter, No Child Left Behind, and blah, 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 nothing. You know, they don't feel it. They don't know it. There's never a plan attached to it. And I don't know why it's satiating or satisfying to a large group. And I don't like all the identity politics, obviously, you know, everyone.
But you say, obviously, that's, you talk about that in your book. How is it for you as a comedian to have to deal with the no joke, all woke culture? I mean, it's difficult for liberal comedians. Are you able to be a comedian? I mean, it just seems to me that when you have folks like Jerry Seinfeld and tons of other mainstream comedians who we would never consider conservative or anything like that, but they're just sick and tired of having to put up with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's weird. There's sort of, there's a couple answers to that. One is, there's kind of two groups of Hollywood types. There are the group that disagree with you, but can still be friends with you and still work with you and still participate with you. And then there's the group that disagrees with you, or better yet, you disagree with them, so they can, you are, you know, wished out into the cornfield. They can never speak to you again. So there's a lot of that in Hollywood. There's a lot of that in comedy. And, you know, I always say it when people say, you know, you go on Fox News and, you know, you go on Tucker Carlson and you're chasing a dollar going on Fox News or whatever it is, echoing their talking points, which I always love the idea that there's talking points. You know what I mean? I've been on Tucker Carlson 10 times. I've never had a discussion with him about what I was going to talk about. So I don't know how these magical talking points are communicated to me, maybe the way whales or dolphins communicate or something. So then they go, oh, you're just going on Fox News chasing a dollar. And I go, listen, I would go on Don Lemon's show. I'd go on Rachel Maddow's show. I'd go on any of the late night shows. I'd go on every show all the time. They won't have me on. You're banished. Once you go on Tucker Carlson or Fox News, then you're not allowed on the other shows. So right. It becomes this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy where they're like, all you do is Fox News. No, I will do any show at any time. I have. I've never turned a show down. I don't get invited on other shows.
And now would you do this show if I could get you an invitation, because I know the producer? Just theoretically.
Your show?
Yeah.
No. I mean,
I don't think you're going to go that far. You don't need to get tagged with that, because I'm a hater. I'm a big time hater. I'm loaded with hate. Let me ask you about what's going on in the country right now, because it's all tied in. We have to me, the big headline is that the elders of the Democratic Party are unable to muster a sentence criticizing the incredible violence that is happening with these mobs threatening people all around the country and so on and so forth. That, to me, that's the headline, because in the past, anybody would have been looking for a sister soldier moment where they could be the one to say something, and then suddenly, you know, half of America goes for them because they said what everybody's thinking.
it's kind of wild to me that the Democratic leadership can't do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon, which is there's a small group of people doing bad, very bad things, and we have kind of associated them with your side, with the Democratic side. It's sort of like hydrochloroquine or something. The president said it might show some promise, and the entire news media turned on hydrochloroquine. And my feeling is hydrochloroquine can be effective, and rioters and mobs in the streets of Seattle and Portland, whatever, can be bad, and you can still be a Democrat. You know what I mean? Like a broken clock is right twice a day, right? Like you can say, I'm a good Democrat. I'm against this violence in Portland and the streets and looters and mobs and all that. And we'll see if hydrochloroquine is effective. It's okay to do that. But now what Trump has done is he's forced everyone just to say never, ever. Like,
We're going to go to break. I'm talking to the author of I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Adam Carolla. We'll be right back. Folks, I'm talking to Adam Carolla. You know him as a comedian. I know him as a comedian and the author of a new book called I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Navigating Our All Woke, No Joke Culture. Adam, we're just talking about, you know, these woke mobs and how the party leaders, the Democratic Party leaders, don't seem to be able to say anything against them. I think it's really telling. It's like they're scared that they will be canceled, that the mob will go after them if they don't say everything they need to say. It's like the Chinese Cultural Revolution or the French Revolution. It's like everybody's scared that they're next.
I got to tell you, there are certain sort of watershed moments you think about on your point, which is like, I was watching a Bill Maher show a couple of weeks back, and they had a longtime writer, a journalist for like the New York Times. And he was sort of saying to her, should they be taking op-eds from senators? I think it was the Tom Cotton thing. Should we be taking that stuff down? And she's like, I'm all for free speech, but I do agree with taking that one down. And it's like, you're a 55-year-old journalist and you're agreeing with taking op-eds down? And she was like, well, you know, the reason is the op-ed wasn't too bad, but it didn't comport with his tweets. He had tweets that were negative, that were different than the op-ed. I'm like, well, so how's that an argument for taking down the op-ed? You're a journalist. That's insane that you're agreeing with taking down op-eds from senators. And always listen to the verbiage, you know. She's also a journalist who was saying, well, because he wanted to call in the National Guard to arrest some of the protesters. And it's like, he didn't say some of the protesters. He said violent protesters. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't say some. He didn't say come in and arrest some. Right. There's a group of 500 peaceful protesters. You should arrest 50 of them. He said the violent ones. And you're a journalist and you know it. And you're misrepresenting it. Like, this is scary to me. You're literally a 30-year journalist, and you're siding with the group who's taking down the op-ed.
That's where we are. In other words, that's to me where it's a new world. You know, you used to be able to say that. You know, the New York Times, they lean left. There's a lot I don't like, but they're basically doing journalism. That is over. And to my mind, it's why people like you and me, we have to speak loudly what we know is right, because there's so many people afraid in this new climate to do that. I think that the New York Times and many things like that, they're gone. Like, they're basically, you know, might as well be the Inquirer. I don't know what will become of them, but you can't function that way. And not enough people are interested in that.
I agree. I also think there's a little bit of a phenomenon that's going on that's probably not going to last that much longer, which is, and I'd be curious what you think of this theory. I feel like when most people, and I work with a lot of people who just sort of, they're younger, they just get their information from CNN or the New York Times. When the people who watch Fox know they're watching Fox. And even though they agree with most of what Tucker Carlson is saying or Sean Hannity is saying, they still know what they're watching. When people watch CNN, they think they're watching the news, just right. Generic news. You know what I mean? So I talk to a lot of people that are like, they've never heard of half the stuff that Fox is reporting. It doesn't even make the round. They literally don't know what's going on. When you talk about, you know, did you hear about this whole Nick Sandman lawsuit and blah, blah, blah. They're like, what happened? You know, and they're like, Nick Sandman. Like, oh yeah, the MAGA hat kid who blocked the elder from the Cherokee tribe. Yeah, what about it?
Yeah.
That guy's suing everyone and winning. Why? What happened? Like, they watch CNN like you're at the airport. You know what I mean? Like, you're just sitting at a bar in the airport drinking a beer and just reading the scroll. Like, that's the news. Yeah. And then when you watch Fox, people go, all right, you watch Fox, you're brainwashed by Fox. You watch Fox, you know you're watching Fox. You know what you're getting. You agree, or oftentimes agree, but you still know you're doing it. And that's kind of the difference to me, that people who are watching CNN don't know they're watching CNN. They think they're watching the news.
When you wrote this book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, that's basically just a jokey conceit, right? In other words, there's nothing deeper about, you just thought of a funny title, but the book is really about navigating our all woke, no joke culture, just so people know what they're getting.
Yes, it is that. Although if you listen to me, you know, if you travel with my words versus your dog, you'd probably be better off.
Exactly. Well, when I want to know more about you and my audience to know more about you. Where did you grow up, and how did you evolve into who you are?
I grew up in North Hollywood, California.
North Hollywood, California. Were you folks in show business? What are you doing up there?
Now, North Hollywood just had the word Hollywood in it. It really wasn't. It wasn't Hollywood. Just kind of blue collar, working class, you know, sort of poor white people.
So you grew up blue collar work. Actually, they're giving me the signal. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Adam Carolla. The new book is I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. These uncertain times can cause uncertain gut slowdown. Worry and fear can wreak havoc on our digestion, making it hard to feel optimum. Bloating, less energy, and occasional constipation can slow you down in your daily activity. Try Life Change Tea at getthetea.com. Life Change Tea can help get things moving so you can get that boost of energy you need. Life Change Tea helps protect and defend your health from intruders. It's a weird time right now with all the uncertainty, so gear up and defend your health. Where do you go to purchase? Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. The specials are on the front page, and we have numerous supplements to help combat intruders. It's time to take charge of our health and to feel better in life. It's time to live. Again, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. GetTheTea.com. It is so worth it. GetTheTea.com.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with MyPillow. You may notice that I have a bobblehead
of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are, and I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to MyPillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you.
The preacher taunted me and he smiled. Said,
folks, I'm talking to the comedian, Adam Carolla. The Adam Carolla. Adam. When Toyota came out with a car named the Corolla, were you embarrassed?
God, the Corolla must have hit the U.S. in the early 70s.
Oh, that early?
Yeah, it was been around since the 70s. So I was probably too young or whatever. I was fine. All it did was replace Crayola crayons that my Pop Warner football teammates would call me Crayola.
So it wasn't a big thing for you to process. I'm just want checking it out. But so you grew up, roughly speaking, working class, you said.
I would say a little below working class. My mom was a welfare food stamp person. We lived in a kind of broken down house that my grandparents had bought a second fixer upper kind of rental house property, like literally just for $10,000 in the San Fernando Valley in North Hollywood area, for like, you know, like 1952 was like $10,000 or whatever. Right. My mom is pretty depressed and pretty dysfunctional and pretty unable to work. So we just lived in this kind of broken down house and just got welfare.
And how did you, you know, at what point did you say, I want to be a comedian? Like, what was that something that was early or later? How did you?
I had a sense of humor, but I didn't come from a world where you got to do what you wanted to do for a living. You know, I came from a place where you got a job and you like fought to keep it, you know, and everything was about getting $6 an hour, then seeing if you could get $10 an hour. It was all about how much you got an hour and your job. A job wasn't supposed to be fulfilling. It wasn't supposed to be interesting. It wasn't supposed to be stimulating. It was supposed to be a job. You worked. And I was a very bad student. So all my work was just kind of physical work. I just cleaned carpets. And when I got out of high school, I walked onto a construction site, picked up garbage, dug ditches, moved drywall. Just, I was a laborer. And those were the kind of jobs I had. I became a carpenter. And, you know, then I got to a kind of a crossroads. I was like 20, 21, 22. I was just kind of living in my one bedroom apartment with my two roommates. And, you know, it was like I drove a truck, a beat up old truck, and I didn't have any insurance and I didn't have any cash. And I worked hourly and daily, you know, in construction, the kind of work I did, you didn't get paid for Christmas. You had no medical, no dental,
right.
No, nothing. There's just nothing. You got paid, you know, $9 an hour. That was your job. And it was like dirty and dangerous and I didn't like it. And I just sort of, I had a conversation with myself that more people should realistically have, which is I was just sitting in my apartment. I was like, you know, you're 21 and a half. This sucks. Your life is going to be a life filled with sort of no air conditioning, a lot of poverty, no travel, no sports cars, no anything, just work on construction sites. And I thought, I don't want that big picture. Like, what could I think about doing? And yeah, I knew I was a very bad student. I wasn't really capable of filing or filling things out or getting my whatever degree and becoming an attorney or something like that. So I just thought, well, what else do you do? Like, what is your other quality beside you're a hard worker and you're good with your hands?
Yeah.
What is your other quality? What can you do? And I thought, I have a sense of humor. That's all I thought. So I thought, okay, you're 21, 22. How about we just give it until you're 30 and see if you can make some kind of career, not as a stand-up comedian or in front of the camera or anything, just something out off the construction site into something that would be more creative. Maybe you could write jingles or slogans for a greeting card company or join a writer's room for a bad sitcom or anything. But, or maybe you would be the one on camera or behind the microphone. I don't know. I didn't plan it out. I was just like, what you're doing now sucks. And you could do it until you're 30, but you don't want to do it when you're 40. And then like,
what is the first thing you did? I mean, where do you go from that thought?
I had a friend who was, I knew a young woman whose family lived up in the hills. And I knew that her dad and her mom were like creatives. Like the dad was a musician and worked in the industry and the mom did something with acting or something. And I said to her, Danielle, I said, can I talk to your mom? Cause all my dude friends from the Valley, they're, you know, they didn't know anything. And the mom said, yeah, I know what you should do. You should take a Groundlings class. And I said, well, what is that? I said, it's an improv troupe. You know, it's on the West Side. You go down there, you sign up, they take an improv class. And I said, okay. And I went down, I saw a Groundlings show on a Friday night, and I signed up the next day for a set of Groundlings classes with, by the way, it was like $300 that I didn't have. You know, I didn't have car insurance back then. And I said, fine, I'll sign up. And I just kept signing up for Groundling classes. And if there was an open mic, I'd do stand up. I'd talk to anybody about.
Right there. That's so amazing to me that you go from nothing. You're just thinking. And then you think, who do I know? Who do I know? Next thing you know, you're in the world of comedy. Because if you're taking Groundlings classes, obviously you're just in that world where people that are thinking that way. And you just proceed. But until that moment, you didn't even know that world existed.
No, not really. I knew what sitcoms were, and I knew what stand-up was, you know, but that was about it. And there wasn't a whole lot of channels or outlets or anything. So I didn't know what was going on. But I never put the pressure on myself. I just showed up and I said, I don't know anything, but I'm gonna learn.
Well, I want to remind people that you have a book out. It's called I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. When we come back, I want to ask you, how that went for you. Or actually, we've just got a couple seconds. What was the next step, just briefly? And then I want to keep going.
I slowly kind of immersed myself into that world of sketch and improv. By day, of course, I was working full time as a carpenter, but by night.
Hang on, we'll put a pin in it. We'll be right back talking to Adam Carolla.
We'll make the film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
Adam, so I'm just fascinated by this. So what are the steps that lead you to the man show? I mean, you're a carpenter and you're doing this comedy on the side. At what point do you break through somehow?
I was, coming up on my 30th birthday. I didn't have any success. I still was driving a truck and living with roommates. And, I was working at the time as a carpenter, but I was also working as a boxing trainer because that was always a passion of mine as well. And it was just, you know, it was one of those white collar fitness places like from the 90s. And I heard listening to the local radio in Los Angeles that there was a morning zoo type boxing match was going to take place. And in that boxing match, it was Michael, the maintenance man from the Kevin and Bean morning show on K-Rock in Los Angeles, going to fight Jimmy, the sports guy. Jimmy, the sports guy, turned out to be Jimmy Kimmel. And I just vowed to train one of them just so I could see the inside of the studio.
Unbelievable. I just love these stories. I mean, you really can't make it up. How bizarre, how absolutely bizarre. We just got a couple of minutes left. I mean, how did you, because we're talking about what's going on in the country, which you can't avoid, unfortunately, but how did you end up having a basically conservative sensibility? Because my guess is that if you grow up in a working class universe, you just see reality in a way that you're not forced to see if you go to some four-year college and hang out with those kind of, you're just not forced to see the reality of life the way you were forced to see it and working those jobs.
Yeah, I have a very strong mechanical building background. And when you live in a very tangible world where you have to, you talk to any builder, I know what their politics are. You know, you can't be AOC and build, you know, commercial office real estate. You just can't be it. You can't be pie in the sky. I'm not even, you know, it's not even really a critique, good or bad. It's just, I think very mechanically. And when you think mechanically, it's just nuts and bolts, it's straight ahead. What's going to work? How's this going to work? You don't really have any proclamations of like, you know, no child left behind or something like that. Or, you know, there are no illegal aliens or illegal people. Or nothing makes sense other than just engineering. And I come from that world. And so for me, that's my politics. It's just very nuts and bolts. What's going to work? It's like, does school choice work or not? If it works, then we're doing school choice. That's all. I don't need to know the politics attached to it.
Well, you pretend you don't, but the fact of the matter is it's there, you know, it's just that you don't need to go there because you can see past those principles to what works. But if you work it backwards, there are principles, there's reasons that things work. But I'm just fascinated because I think that people that live in the quote unquote real world, usually they understand that, you know, you can't just print money and make the problem go away that way or whatever. They have a more practical sense of things. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Adam Carolla, I could talk to you forever, which I would take as a compliment. You really are a pal to come on the program. Thank you. Good luck with the book and everything you do. I'm your emotional support. Animal is available everywhere by Adam Carolla. Adam, again, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to suggest that you go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com, particularly right now, they have a film called One Nation Under God. It tells the story of a student who goes to a prestigious magnet school and finds out that the principal has issued an edict. No one can mention God in the school. Well, a few weeks later, a senator and presidential candidate comes to the school to speak, and David Gutierrez asks him a question. He says, if our founding fathers placed God at the center of our nation, which of course they did, shouldn't God be a part of our schools and government today? The senator, no surprise, is caught off guard, and what he says sets off a frenzy of national press coverage. So see how the courage of one student standing for his conviction can inspire others. Watch One Nation Under God at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com. Use the code ERIC for 20% off.